Man, did I need that? Did I need the Yankees winning another series? Today, especially. As in Sunday, May 12th? Let's see. Yeah. Did I need that? The same day the Knicks got outclassed, embarrassed, in a way that you should never, no matter who you have on the court. So, boy, did I need the Yankees to do what they did. Good God. So, at least I've got them. Let's talk New York Yankees, episode 682 of the pod. Welcome to the show. Let's get it. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, RJ Carbone. You are listening to BD4, where there's no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA. Yanks every series, Knicks every game, MMA on occasion. Let's get to it.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
The Yankees are champions of baseball.
Shaking and baking. Right here on the near fight.
Oh, WS trying to close the show.
She was doing a great job of feeding.
That is it.
Okay, a much-needed Yankees win, a much-needed series win for your New York Yankees as they win the series at the Trop, 2 out of 3, against the Tampa Bay Rays. Much-needed. And, you know, things continue to look good. That is now 10 series wins in 13 series of the year. 10 wins, one split, 2 losses. So things are looking very positive for your 2024 New York Yankees. They have the most wins in the American League. They've got the second most wins in all of baseball by one less than somebody. We're now, you know, we're into the point of the season where I think we're past a quarter of the way through. So it's like we're at a point where we know who the Yankees are, right? We have a good understanding of who this team is, a good idea of what their strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, the pitching has surprisingly, but not carried them to this point. And then unsurprisingly, like, the offense is now starting to catch up with the pitching. And that's equaling wins. That's giving you the 27-15 second place by a half game from first place record. I think a lot of us weren't expecting the pitching. I've always been in the camp of, at least with the rotation itself, low floor, high ceiling. So the fact that they're pitching very well doesn't shock me. Now that the bats are starting to catch up, it's leading you to these winning streaks and these spans of X amount of wins in a certain amount of games. And it's good. 2 out of 3 at the Trop for the Yankees. Fuck the Trop. God, that place will always be a nightmare. I thought they were supposed to leave that place. I don't know. For some reason, I thought I heard that they were done there. But we keep going back. Fuck that place and its shitty lighting and all of its antics, all the antics that go on there. I mean, the first at bat of the series hits the catwalk, fly ball. The only positive thing about the Trop is that it's full of Yankees fans because it's Florida, and that's where New Yorkers go. New Yorkers go to retire. So there were Yankees fans left and right in that place, in that dump. But it was good to take 2 out of 3, so let's talk about it. Before we dive in, just some injury updates, some in-house stuff for the Yankees. Scott Efros is getting close to facing live hitters, so take that information however you may. Tommy Canley threw a scoreless inning in rehab with the Tampa Tarpons, and then he went on to throw a bullpen after. I would say he's probably about 3 or so rehabs away, so probably by the end of May, you'll see him with the big league squad bearing any setbacks. Speaking of setbacks, Lou Trevino has now been shut down. He's facing a setback with elbow inflammation or some kind of inflammation in the arm, in the throwing arm. So that's always a good thing to hear. This guy has been nothing but a freaking joke since Cashman traded for him. Just never healthy. A shame because he was pretty quality when he was healthy. But now he's going to be shut down for a few weeks, and there's that. At least relief pitcher Nick Birdie returned this series. And then Gerrit Cole getting closer and closer. He threw a 30-pitch about bullpen. He threw fastballs again. That was once again around, I think he was averaging around 89 miles an hour. But he mixed in the breaking ball this time. And from what I hear, you know, the quotes I've been hearing from Cole, from Boone, that things are going well. DJ LeMahieu took live BP, and that apparently went well. Oswald Peraza continues to rehab in Somerset, although that might just be where he stays. And then we got the update at the beginning of the series on the Martian. Jason Dominguez starting up a rehab assignment this week on Tuesday with the Tampa Tarpons, and he's going to be DHing for the first couple of weeks of the rehab assignment. And so that's, you know, hopefully we see Jason Dominguez in pinstripes, New York Yankee pinstripes, by June, right? Because I'm pretty sure, I think Nelson said it on the telecast in one of these games, that once you start your rehab, you have to make a decision after 30 days. So I hope that once those 30 days are up, the Yankees bring them up to the big leagues and they don't just can stash him in AAA to get more time because they have, you know, a logjam of outfielders right now. If you got to go with a rotation, go with a rotation. You know, Grisham's not important, by the way. Neither is Jones. I don't care that he homered today. Stanton's going to be getting his days off. Judge, he'll get DH days, as will Soto. Figure it out and put this kid in the big leagues where he belongs. He earned that last year when he came up here and raked against good pitching for a week or whatever it was. He at least earned the opportunity to come back and see what he has. So he's near. And I think that covers all of the injury stuff. We did miss the Houston series. I was very busy last week, but we handed out, where we were going to hand out cap tips to, I tipped my cap to Judge from that series, to Luis Gil for the start he made in that series, and to Ron Marinaccio, RIP. We'll talk more about that later. So those three guys getting my salutes, Judge, Gil, Marinaccio from the Houston series. But as for this Tampa Bay Rays series, let's talk about it when we return from our first break here on BD4. Welcome to the podcast. We'll be right back.
Hey there, thanks for listening in so far. If you enjoy this episode, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're on YouTube, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to the show. Episode 682 of the podcast, the Yanks win the series at the Trop. And they took the first game, 2-0 versus the Rays. Game one, it was the righty Schmidt going up against the righty Bradley. And the Yankees scored 2 runs on 9 hits, 1 home run. They walked only twice. They only struck out 9 times. They were 2-for-6 with runners in scoring position. Yeah, they got it going. Top of the fourth inning. Judge walks. Stanton singles. So you've got first and third for Anthony Rizzo. And he comes through. He comes through by making contact for an RBI base hit off of a high fastball. And the Yankees take the 1-0 lead. Nobody scores until the top of the ninth when Rizzo comes through again. And he comes through with a leadoff home run in the ninth inning off of Adam. It's a first pitch cutter that he takes deep. And it's 2-0. There's your final score. So your bats were all Anthony Rizzo, who finished the game 2-for-4, 2 RBIs, a home run. Him and the rest, like the lower half of the order, were very productive. You had Rizzo going 2-for-4. You had Stanton going 2-for-4. Trevino 2-for-4. John Birdie 2-for-4. And then you have the top half of the order. Some mixed results, not much. Volpe 1-for-5, 3 strikeouts. Judge 0-for-2, couple walks. Soto 0-for-4. Verdugo 0-for-4, 3 strikeouts. Gleyber 0-for-4. Pitching was key in this one for the Yankees. Clark Schmidt, we'll talk about him. He had an excellent start. We'll get to him later. And then the bullpen combined for 2 1/3, no runs, 5 strikeouts. Nick Birdie got the final out in the 7th. Weaver got the 8th inning, no runs, couple strikeouts. And then Clay Holmes gets the 9th. He was cardiac Clay. You know, he walked a couple batters, let up a hit. A little bit of a scary situation there. But like he always does, knock on wood, at the end of the day, he prevents runs from scoring. Struck out 3. Gets the save, and the Yankees win 2-0. That was game one. Game two of this series was the Yankees' lone loss, 7-2. This was the lefty Nestor Cortes versus the right-hander Zach Little. I forget how you pronounce his name. Regardless, the Yankee bats did not much, but 2 runs, 5 hits, a double, 4 strikeouts. They were 1-for-4 with runners in scoring position. They cracked the board in the top of the 2nd inning after going down 1-0. They answer back when Rizzo draws a walk. Wells pulls a double into the gap. Grisham walks. That loads the bases for Anthony Volpe. And he hits a 2-run single to score 2. That's also when Trent Grisham was caught on the bases going from 2nd to 3rd. Absolutely freaking inexcusable. Regardless, the Yankees are up 2-1 after the top of the 2nd. They had a missed opportunity in this game in the top of the 7th to really tie the game at the very least. Top 7 comes. The Yankees are down 4-2. Grisham's hit by a pitch. That's when Clevinger is pulled. Volpe gets a base hit off of Jason Adam. So now you have first and third. With 2 outs for your best player in Juan Soto. And Juan Soto takes a, I don't know if it was a fastball, but he takes it deep to dead center field, and he just misses a home run. Ends up being a deep fly out to end the inning. So that was their big missed opportunity. Could have took the lead there with the homer. But they do not. This was an interesting lineup in this game. Aaron Boone. Gave the Yankees a little bit of a no Gleyber Torres look in this. They had Judge DH, Grisham center field, so that meant no Stanton, which I didn't like that, you know. But the Yankees, I guess their thought process was they don't want Judge on turf in all 3 of these games, you know, with the toe injury and everything. So Judge was DHing, and then you go to the infield. Again, it was a no Torres look. You had John Birdie play 3rd base. I guess he was batting 5th because the Yankees wanted a right-handed bat in there to split up the lefties. So it was Birdie 5th, and then everybody else after that was left. Oswaldo was at 2nd base. So it was interesting, you know. Judge and Grisham were hit by a pitch in this game. Birdie was 1-for-4. Volpe 3-for-4. A couple RBIs. Wells 1-for-2 with a double. Rizzo walked. And that was all, really, for your bats. On the mound in game two, Nestor Cortez went 5 1/3, allowed 4 runs on 5 hits, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. He had 2 home runs allowed. 89 pitches were thrown, and he picked up the loss. I kind of expected him to struggle against the Rays here. Nestor Cortez being a left-handed pitcher facing an all-righty lineup. Literally 1-9, the Rays are stacked with right-handed bats. So didn't feel good about that, and was right to, because Nestor Cortez was not good in this game. He was giving up hard contact from the get-go. His fastball was being hit around. You know, the first pitch he throws was the Yandy Diaz leadoff solo home run. Bottom of the third comes. The Yankees are up 2-1, but he walks Jose Siri. Yandy Diaz again doubles off of him. And then you got a Rosarena at the plate. High fastball. Smacks it for a 3-run shot. 4-2 Tampa after 3. Sixth inning comes. You get the Paredes leadoff double. Cortez strikes out Ramirez. But after that, he's pulled for Santana, who escapes the runner in scoring position jam. But yeah, this wasn't a good start for Nestor Cortez. Frustrating to watch. Just couldn't get his calls, and he was kind of, like, the body language wasn't good. He was moaning about balls and strikes a lot, and, you know, the umpire had to come out to talk to him. Boone had to talk to him in the dugout about it. It was just annoying because it wasn't, like, anything egregious. It was borderline calls that probably leaned, like, it wasn't, like, he was kind of incorrect. But yeah, 2 straight starts for Nestor Cortez now after looking very good 3 starts ago where he's just not looked very good. And on the year, he's got an ERA a shade above 4. So again, he's been so-so as I expected. I said entering the year, if Nestor Cortez is an adequate number 5, I'm okay. And that's exactly what he has been for them so far. He's had some gems, and he's had some mediocre outings, which means he's not really had any clunkers, any total shitfests yet. So that's a positive. He's at worst keeping you in the game, you know. But it's, you know, all of his rougher starts have come on the road, which has been a trend for Nestor Cortez, not just this season. This season, he has a 6.75 ERA in 5 starts on the road, which means he has a 1.59 at home in 4 starts. But it's something that's bothering him in his career. He's got a 4.55 on the road in his career and a 3.21 at home. So this has been a Nestor Cortez trend, and it's just very, very glaring this year. So he's going to need a bounce back next series against Minnesota. I don't know if he's pitching against Minnesota, actually. But we'll talk about that later, the Minnesota series. The bullpen in this game, again, not good. Santana gets 2 outs in the 6th, but then he struggles in the 7th, right? He walks Rortfed. Then he allows back-to-back RBI doubles to Diaz and Rosarena. So it's 6-2 Tampa by then. He's pulled for Ian Hamilton, who comes into the top of the 7th with 1 out, lets up the infield base hit to put runners on 1st and 3rd, and then that's when you get the sac fly to Juan Soto. That scores a runner. That was the Santana run that scored, and it made it 7-2. Tonkin got the 8th, an inning, no run there, but the Yankee bullpen combines for 2 2/3, 3 runs, 5 base runners. And so they lose 7-2 because of that. And that was the second game of the series. Game 3 of this series earlier today, the Yankees bounce back with a win, a 10-6 win, with the righty Heel on the mound going up against the lefty Alexander. 10 runs on 11 hits, 7 of them extra base hits, only four strikeouts, a double play hit into, and they were one for one with runners in scoring position. Top of the first inning, you get the Anthony Volpe leadoff triple. Then you get the Juan Soto sack fly. It's 1-0 Yankees. Top three, Jamai Jones, his first career home run, a leadoff homer. Top four, Rizzo, a leadoff single. Trevino, the two-out, two-run home run. And all of a sudden, it's 4-0 Yankees. Top five, to make it 6-0, you get the Soto one-out base hit, and then Judge hits him in by driving a two-run home run to right field off of a middle cutter. Top eight, this was after the Rays make it a little too close for comfort. After being up 6-0, it becomes 6-5 in the bottom of the seventh. But the top of the eighth comes, and Stanton singles off of Armstrong. Grisham pinch runs for him. Rizzo's at the plate. He doubles to put runners on first and third. And then Gleyber Torres comes to the plate, gets a fastball over the heart of the plate, and it's a cutter on the seventh pitch of the at-bat, and he drives it for his second home run of the season. Big hit there for Gleyber Torres. He very much needed that. And the Yankees take the lead, 10-5. Judge goes 2-for-4, home run, a walk, 2 RBIs. Rizzo goes 2-for-5 with a double. Trevino goes 2-for-4, couple home runs, 3 RBIs. I don't know why I forgot to add that part in there. Did I mention that he hit 2 home runs? I don't know. Trevino, couple homers, 3 RBIs. Gleyber, 1-for-4, home run, 3 RBIs. Volpe, 1-for-5 with a triple. Soto, 1-for-4, sac fly, RBI. Stanton, 1-for-4. Grisham walked. Birdie was 0-for-4. Jones, 1-for-2. Homer, walk, hit by pitch, RBI. He played over Alex Verdugo in this game. Didn't love that decision, but of course, anything I bitch about comes back to bite me in the ass. On the mound, Luis Gil turns in 6 scoreless innings. 3 hits, couple walks, 3 strikeouts, no home runs allowed, 91 pitches thrown, and he gets the win. Didn't have his swing and miss stuff, but the fastball slider combo was working still. This guy's so good at just limiting hits. Man, like if he had consistent command and didn't walk anybody, like it's the recipe for a guy to have a no-hitter or a perfect game in his career. Like the guy does not allow hits. Knock on wood. He's already set records for Yankee pitchers. But yeah, he's having an awesome season. He's got this good tandem working with him and Trevino. They've got a good battery together, right? I think it's his last 5 starts now have been with Jose Trevino, so they're kind of making that a thing. You know, a youth and a vet combining to produce a very good outing. Did Aaron Boone go to the bullpen a little too soon? You know, Ferguson's been awful. But granted, you know, he hadn't been entering the day. But, you know, Heel was hot. He was working with a big lead. He only had 91 pitches. I was kind of hoping he let him go 7 or at least into the 7th. But I understand the Yankees are trying to limit his innings and they're trying to limit his pitch count because he's coming back from Tommy John. And, you know, I think the only complaint there is if I'm going to go to anybody up 6-0, you know, I go to Tonkin, right? Just as the mop-up guy to steal outs and save arms. Caleb Ferguson's supposed to be one of your high leverage guys. And he made it a high leverage game, right? But Heel has been your best starting pitcher this season. I can't see a scenario where you pull him when Cole gets back. I think they might just because of the limit. And this is considering if everybody's healthy, which, let's be honest, pitchers in baseball today aren't ever healthy. So hopefully he is. Hopefully everybody's healthy by the time Cole comes back, and it's a tough decision because that would mean good things have been happening. But yeah, Ferguson was awful. Made this a game when it shouldn't have. He comes in, loads the bases, Jose Siri takes the plate, and Ferguson allows the grand slam. Grand slam in the seventh inning to make it 6-4. Birdie comes in after that. He was not better. Couldn't even record an out. Gives up a run. Weaver was good. We'll talk about Weaver later. Hamilton was bad once again. And so the bullpen combines for 3-plus innings, 6 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, 2 hit batters, which means 10 base runners in 3 innings. Good Christ. But the Yankees find a way to win the game 10-6, and they take 2 out of 3. Much needed 10-run outburst there after going quiet the first 2 games offensively. And we'll talk about the offense when we return from our second break here on the podcast, episode 682 of the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You can follow us on social media as well. On Instagram, we're at BD4Pod and at Rob J. Carbone. On X, we're at BD4Pod and at RJCBD4. And on Facebook, we're BD4. If you're interested in our website, just go to www.bd4blog.com. You can subscribe to our blog on there right on the front page. Just like on the podcast, we cover Yankees, Knicks, and MMA. Also on our website are the links to the different platforms for the podcast. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, RJ Carbone. It's good. It's good to see the bats start to come around. Over their last 8 games, they've had 5 games where they've scored at least 5 runs, including 3 games with 9-plus runs. So they're slowly starting to find it, you know, and it's a good thing that, like, they're doing this all with Juan Soto being pretty quiet of late, right? That was kind of a thing earlier in the year. But Soto's been pretty quiet, and they're finding ways to produce offense without him right now. And, like, even when Soto's quiet, like, he still finds ways to contribute himself. Like, today, in a quiet series, today he salvages it with a sac fly, you know, the RBI there in the first inning. He gets on base with the hit, and he ends up scoring a run. Like, there's never going to be a, knock on wood, slump with Juan Soto, because he's always doing something. But yeah, like, guys are coming around. Aaron Judge finally snapping out of this, what was like a month-long slump, right? His last 15 games, specifically, he's batting .346 with 6 home runs, 14 RBIs. He's got 11 walks and only 12 strikeouts. It's, you know, Aaron Judge is back because he's displaying that easy power the opposite way, right? When Judge is doing that, that is his offense to a T. He's just taking the ball to right field with power. And he's been doing that a ton over the last 15 games here. So it is, I think he's back. I think we're good now. I told you all, you know, you guys were all worried about injuries, and I'm just glad he's back. You know, it's not a coincidence that the bats as a whole start to heat up as soon as Aaron Judge starts to heat up. And that's not, like, that's not a bad thing. Like, people have this weird, like, concept in their head where, like, like, literally every team is very dependent on their best bats. You know, like, last year, sure, the Yankees went where Judge went. That's not the case this year. They actually have depth. And, like, the fact that their offense was middle of the pack with Judge being so bad was very normal for a team that didn't have their best hitter hitting. Like, that's normal. it's any lineup that doesn't have their number one, number two hitter, whatever way you want to put them, hitting, they're not going to produce at a top tier level. That's just common logic. So it's good to see him hitting, because now the Yankees are kind of clicking at a hole. But he's back. Anthony Volpe, it's been a refreshing stretch for him too, because for a while there, he wasn't producing any power, but it's nice to see the power back, because I do want some power. In the last six games, Anthony Volpe's got a .630 slugging, 8 hits, 2 homers, a triple, 7 RBIs. Every once in a while, I like to go and check his Baseball Savant to make sure he's still keeping that swing flat, because, you know, the eye test is hard sometimes. You can't really tell. So I went to check the Baseball Savant page of Anthony Volpe, and still keeping the swing flat. His launch angle this year is 8.4 degrees. Last year, for reference, for context, it was 14.2 degrees. So it's a lot different this year still, which is a positive. The fact that he's repeating consistent mechanics, you know, muscle memory is big for him, for a young player like that. So he's been hitting. He's having a solid season, man. You know, at the beginning of in preseason, I said if Anthony Volpe is a .250, .750 bat, it's a win. And he's been slightly better than that. Anthony Rizzo is back to being Anthony Rizzo, which is also refreshing, right? A big thing with him. For a while there, it was, where's the power? Because he's supposed to be your lefty thump in the middle of the order. And on April 22nd, his slugging percentage was all the way down to .284 across his first 23 games. Since then, in his last 18, he's had a slug of .627. So he has just skyrocketed there. You know, he's hitting the high fastball again. He's been fine with breaking pitches. And he's working at bats and getting on base again, right? He's got a .378 on base in those last 18 games. So the fact that he's slugging and reaching base, right, OPS, that's what you want from your staple bat in the middle of the order. So, you know, he's not four anymore, but he's 5-6. And that's where he was. That's why he was brought here, to be that first baseman who brings that lefty power. So good to see that. And like I said, for a while this year, it was like for a good stretch there from like the second half of April to early May, it was like Juan Soto's producing and, you know, you're getting some Alex Verdugo, but not many others are, right? And now it's like everybody except for Soto and Verdugo are producing at the moment. There have been a tiny sample size of a couple games for them where they're not hitting, but everybody else is. And that's how baseball works. Like, you're not always going to get 1-9 clicking on all cylinders, but you do hope that there are points in the season where you do get that, because you're spending money for that. But the fact that this offense is starting to hit again, and you're the fact that you're getting production from even from like unexpected spots, you know, that's important too. There was always, and I've been hammering this point all year, there was always way too much depth in this lineup to not hit. You know, like, there's names here now. There aren't journeymen who you're going to run into anymore. There are no more McKinneys and Bowers, but there are names. And you're getting production from guys from positions that you didn't expect much production from, right? I mean, you could start at DH, Giancarlo Stanton. On the year, he's got a .450 slugging percentage. He's got 20 RBIs, 14 extra base hits, and that's across 36 games. Yes, I would like for Stanton to get on base a little bit more. You know, seeing that on base in the .280s is just gross. I would like for him to get that in the .300s, but I did not expect any production at all from Stanton. I got to be honest, I thought he was washed. I did. I thought he was just toast. But he's been giving the Yankees power. He's been driving in runs. Is it streaky? Is it maddening? Yes. But that's who he is. and the fact that he's producing for you in any capacity is a win. So you're getting production from Stanton, which you didn't think you would get. You're getting production from that utility third base spot, right? With DJ down, you were worried about that. How is Oswaldo Cabrera going to bounce back? I didn't expect much from him after last season. Now, he's slowed down a little bit, but he's still, you know, producing runs, and he's still been good for a utility guy, you know, for a guy who's not expected to be a big part of this lineup entering the year. John Birdie. I think John Birdie's been pretty solid when he plays. He does a nice job on both ends, you know? So you're getting production there. You're getting production from your catchers, finally, right? This is the last position where, like, you're looking for offense, but you're getting offense. Austin Wells is starting to come around. Austin Wells' last 13 games, he's batting .278. He's got a .395 on base, .500 slugging, which equates to an .895 OPS. 5 doubles, a home run, 7 walks. He looks good. You know, he looks like this. Listen, I always thought he was going to be a doubles machine. I think he could be a guy who hits for a pretty decent average for a catcher, a .260 hitter maybe at some point. And, you know, he was always making fair contact, and he was always working good at bats. But it's finally starting to come to fruition here for Austin Wells. And then Jose Trevino, I mean, what else is there to say here? The guy continues to hit. And actually, that's where we're going to segue and give him his first salute of the year. I'm tipping my cap to Jose Trevino. I don't have a cap on. Jose Trevino this series went 4 for 10, 400. With a 1,400 OPS, he hit 2 home runs, had 3 RBIs, scored 2 runs, and that was across 3 games at the Trop. Which means on the year, Jose Trevino, who I did not expect any offense from, on the season, he's batting .293 with a .341 on base, a .453 slugging, which equates to a .794 OPS, 4 homers, 14 RBIs, and that's across 26 games played. So he gets his first salute of the year, his first tip of the cap. Yeah, it's good to see. You know, he's continuing to hit left-handed pitching, and that's just, that's, you know, having a righty Trevino hitting lefties, and then a lefty Wells hitting righties, that's the perfect catching platoon right there. And Jose Trevino has always been able to hit lefties. Even last year when he was struggling, he's always been able to, at the very least, be adequate against left-handed pitching. And as a Yankee, he's got an .835 OPS against left-handed pitching. So, good to see him hitting, man. And I don't know if it's going to continue, but he's at least given me optimism that he can be a major league threat at the plate from the backstop position, which is all I want. And defensively, you know, I think he threw a runner out this series. He's got, again, this battery working with him and Luis Seal. They've developed a good chemistry together. So, Jose Trevino, I'm tipping my cap to you. And while we're on this subject, let's tip our caps to Clark Schmidt. I thought Clark Schmidt was the best starting pitcher of this series. In game two, was it game two? No, game one. In game one of the series, Clark Schmidt goes 6 2/3 innings, no runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, no home runs allowed, 87 pitches thrown, and he got the win. This is also his first salute of the year. I'm tipping my cap to him for the first time this season, Clark Schmidt. Yeah, I mean, it was his best start yet. He finally gave the Yankees some length. He's never gone this deep into a game. And I think it was because he was pounding the strike zone, very aggressive and not afraid to, you know, to get hit if he had to. But he was doing very good. He was being very effective with his pitch mix. And was he pulled too soon? You know, 87 pitches in the seventh inning with 2 outs. I was okay with it just because he gave up some hard hit balls in the sixth inning, was helped out by his defense, picked off a runner. Seventh inning, gave up some runners. You know, knowing how Clark Schmidt operates, he tires out once he gets past that third time through. And, you know, it was a tight game. So I had no problem going to your bullpen here. So I thought it was a good start from Clark Schmidt. He went to the curveball more. He flashed that to left-handed batters a little more. Got ground ball outs. You know, it's been a good season for him, man, you know. And he's mixing up his pitches a lot more. You know, he's sequencing his pitches better. You know, pitching versus throwing. That slider sweeper looks great again. That was a pitch that he struggled with at times last year. The sinker has actually been his worst pitch. When he gets hard, it's because of the sinker command. But it's still been adequate. And the cutter's been effective for him. The knuckle curveball has been effective for him. So he's looked good. You know, he's not struggling against left-handed batting. So that's a positive too. That was one of the things that I was concerned about entering this season. I wanted to see how that panned out, but he's been more of a reverse splits guy this year. So I'm tipping my cap to Clark Schmidt, and let's go to the bullpen. I'll tip my cap to Luke Weaver. Luke Weaver this series pitched very well. He appeared in two games, combined for 2 2/3 innings, no runs, 4 strikeouts, no base runners, just one hit batter. 38 pitches, got 2 holds and 2 appearances, and he continues to do the damn thing, man. This is also his first salute of the season. I'm tipping my cap to Luke Weaver for the first time all year, which feels disrespectful because he's kind of been their best guy, not named Clay Holmes. Which, you know, speaking of, getting some high leverage outs in different roles. Like in the first game of the series, didn't really see him until the first game of the series be used in that eighth inning setup role before Clay Holmes. Today he was kind of back in his normal role, but wherever he pitches, he's doing the job right now. You know, he does a nice job setting up the at bat with first pitch strikes. That's exactly what you want from a reliever. Getting a lot of weak contact, mixing in some strikeouts. He's been great, and he's kind of been, you know, one of the guys that we call, you know, the Cashman Blake special, right? Cashman brings in a random, Blake turns him into something good. This is a guy who was DFA'd twice last year, Seattle, Cincy. The Yankees picked him up late in the year. Wasn't very good. I've always looked at him, I'm not going to lie, as some random bum. You know, I was never impressed with his stuff. Didn't like his command, and I thought his pitch mix was very mediocre. He had a very short arsenal of pitches, and it was ugly last year. And then it was ugly for a bit to start this season. But maybe I was wrong. You know, his fastball only sits around 95, but he's got an excellent changeup. He uses that against lefties a lot, and it's very effective. It gets a lot of swing and miss. It drops out of the zone very well. It's a great pitch to complement off the fastball because of the difference in vertical drop. And he's offering in the cut fastball a lot more than he used to. And that's, again, that's a Matt Blake thing. Matt Blake has been a guy who has emphasized the cut fastball with a ton of Yankee pitchers. You know, the Yankees like to emphasize spinning the baseball and throw that cutter away to righties, into lefties, if you're a right-handed pitcher. You know, it's a good blend between the four-seam and change, especially because he's able to throw that cutter for strikes. He's not using it as a strikeout pitch, but he's using it as a pitch that generates a lot of weak contact. So, continuing to do a great job as Luke Weaver in that, kind of that Michael King role, right? That was like supposed to be Jonathan Loaisiga's new role, but I don't know what they were thinking there. Injury-prone pitcher going multiple innings was never going to work. And so Luke Weaver has kind of taken that multi-innings weapon role, and it's working out for him. You know, he's been, again, the most consistent relief pitcher before the Yankees get to Holmes. So good for Luke Weaver. He's been one of the bright spots in a bullpen that has been good overall. I mean, they're second in the ERA. But lately, this bullpen is starting to falter a little bit, you know. Listen, my season-long concern has... Yeah, I've been consistent with this. Like, the results have been there all year. I just, in the back of my mind, worry about the sustainability. Right? In the last two games, the bullpen has had a rough time getting outs. 5 2/3 innings, 15 base runners, 9 earned runs. That's fucking horrendous. You know, Ferguson and Santana have had some very ugly outings of late. Santana was lit up in game two, and that was after 7 consecutive outings where he didn't allow a run or an inherited run. So he's kind of, he came back down to earth after that. After all, this is a guy who has a 5.11 career ERA across 167 and a third innings. You know, so would anybody be shocked? Caleb Ferguson, again, was lit up this afternoon. And this was after 7 consecutive outings of no earned runs or inherited runs for him. And because he gave up that grand slam, his ERA has skyrocketed, and it now sits at 6.43. He's a guy who, I don't know, I said it earlier in the year, the stuff doesn't excite me. The high cutter doesn't excite me a lot. I mean, you look at Hamilton. Again, he continues to struggle a little bit. He's not been the same all year. Last season's Ian Hamilton versus this season's Ian Hamilton, completely different pitchers. Started out well in Houston, but that was really it. He's become this whip machine, and in a bad way. Like, he's putting traffic on consistently. The swing and miss stuff is down. You know, I just hope he's not injured. Nick Birdie returned. He was not good in his second outing back. When Nick Birdie's command isn't there, it is a tough watch. You know, between the wild pitches, the walks, the hit batters, just pitches that are way outside the zone. When he's off, good Christ, is he off. So it's, yeah, like I said, it's the sustainability that worries me a little bit, just because it's a ton of randoms, right? You don't have a core of well-known names. You know, Hamilton, Birdie, Santana are randoms. You know, so, like, this is why I was kind of annoyed to see Ron Marinaccio get the demotion. I mean, we're talking about a guy who came up here in 2022, pitched to a 2.05 ERA. Last year, yes, he struggled. He had the 4 ERA, 3.99. I didn't think he was given a fair chance since the recall after that. You know, they sent him down a couple times. This year, he comes back up. You know, after Birdie goes down, Birdie gets called back up. They send Marinaccio back down after looking pretty good. I know the velocity's been down, but he looked good. Tonkin is still on this roster. Tonkin gets to stay. Santana gets to stay. Like, I didn't like that, man. This guy's been pitching well for you. So I don't know if at some point the Yankees are just going to have to, like, with the Trevino news, if that gets bad, what if Kane Lee's not good? Are they going to have to make a trade, right? Like, they need a strikeout artist. And, you know, we played the Oakland A's a few series ago, and a lot of Yankees fans were kind of falling in love with Mason Miller. And if Oakland, you know, listen, they might have to move him. As much as they shouldn't, or not shouldn't, but don't want to, they might have to, just to get a haul of prospects, because they need more. And I'm hearing that Baltimore is interested, so, like, the Yankees might have to trade for someone before Baltimore scoops in. They need strikeout artists. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Mason Miller. You know, that's going to cost a haul of your top prospects. It's going to have to overpay for him, but, like, I don't know if just waiting for Efros and Canely and Trevino is going to be enough. You know, Like, the bullpen now is going to look a lot different than the bullpen in the second half of the season. I get that. But those guys come with question marks, too. Just because their names, they're older. They're injury prone. They've got big questions. You know, so I don't want that to just be their deadline acquisition sell to the fan base. I do think the Yankees need to make some moves for a legitimate strikeout artist in that bullpen. Is it David Bednar? I don't even know what his numbers are. Whoever it is, should have got Josh Hader. But it's good to take 2 out of 3, right? The Rays, listen, I'm not impressed with the American League East. I'm not impressed. I'm very unimpressed with the AL East. I think Boston and Tampa are, you know, maybe they'll remain competitive, but they don't scare me the slightest. I expect Boston to fall off. I don't like them. And I think it's just going to be Baltimore and New York all year at first and second place. I think those two teams are going to be battling. I think they are the two teams with the most talent in this division, and then it's everybody else. I think, if anything, Toronto can compete in terms of talent, but I think they're also very overhyped. We always say this, like, they're going to be so good, but it just never really, they never take that next step. So I think it's going to be the Yankees and the O's, and the O's just lost to the Twins, who the Yankees have next. So you got Baltimore in first. You have the Yankees in second by a half game. You've got Boston in third by 5.5. 5 from the Yankees. Tampa's in fourth by 7 games, 6.5 from the Yankees. And then you got Toronto in last place. But, yeah, the Yankees now go to Minnesota to wrap up this road trip. 3 games in Minnesota. They have the day off tomorrow, Monday. Tuesday at 7:40, it's Carlos Rodon versus Chris Paddock. Chris Paddock was a guy who was very much hyped up when he was a rookie with San Diego. I don't know what he's done since. I don't think he's done much. Wednesday at 7:40, it's Marcus Stroman versus Pablo Lopez. Lopez was the guy who Minnesota traded Arias for, which was always annoying to me that that's who they got for him. Marcus Stroman is due for a rebound, so hopefully this is where he bounces back. He's been pretty bad. And then Thursday, the getaway game at 1. You got Clark Schmidt going up against Joe Ryan. Joe Ryan's probably been their best starting pitcher this year. He's got a 3.21 ERA. He's got a whip of 0.99. It's kind of broken out this season. You know, he hasn't allowed more than 3 earned in any start all year. He's coming off his best start of the season. He went 7 innings, 1 run against Toronto. And Schmidt is also coming off his best start. So that should be a good game. But, yeah, Yankees-Twins. The Twins are second in the AL Central. They're just a half game from the Cleveland Guardians. And they're 0.05 percentage points from the Royals in third place. Minnesota's 24-16. KC is 25-17. So they're not going away. But Minnesota's best trait is the usual. They rely on power. Their pitching's mediocre, but they rely on hitting home runs, and they strike out a lot. So this is a series I expect the Yankees to, at the very least, take 2 out of 3. The Yankees own the Twins. They've always owned the Twins. So hopefully that continues this week. And with that said, I think that's all we have. So we're going to wrap this up here by getting to our final break. Coming back, getting to our trivia question, and then we'll get to our outro from there. Stay with us. Almost on here on BD4. We'll be right back. Studio 69 Productions is a podcast production agency created by Leo Rodriguez to allow content creators to market their podcast. It's an online platform that will market your podcast or any other project that you're working on. Get in touch with Leo Rodriguez from Studio 69 Productions. You can find Studio 69 Productions on Instagram at Studio69NJ. Studio 69 Productions, where dreams are heard and born.
Thanks for listening to BD4, where there is no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis. We also do MMA, Yanks every series, Knicks every game, and MMA on occasion.
Welcome back to the show. Episode 682 of the podcast. I appreciate you all tuning in. Thanks for listening to BD4, where there's no better way to get your Yankees and Knicks analysis, Yanks every series, Knicks every game, MMA on occasion. Be sure to share these episodes on social media. Be sure to download these episodes on Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on there. You can listen and watch the podcast on Spotify, and you can watch the podcast on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe. Give us a like and comment over on YouTube. You are listening to episode 682 of the podcast. I'm your host, RJ. You can find me on social media if you have not yet. I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram at BD4Pod and at Rob J. Carbone. I'm on Twitter or X at BD4Pod and at RJCBD4. That's RJCBD4 and at BD4Pod. And then I'm on Facebook at BD4, at BD4. And if you want to go to my website, where you can find all that stuff and also my blog on that website, you go to bd4blog.com for all that. So with that said, let's wrap this up with our trivia question, and we'll get out of here from there. All right. Yes. So for episode 682 here of the show, our trivia question of the day is to name any of the three Yankee pitchers to have 4 20-win seasons. Name any of the three Yankee pitchers to have 4 20-win seasons. Let me know the answer wherever you can reach me. If you get the answer correct, I'll give you a shout out in the next episode. But folks, that's it. That's all we got for episode 682 here of the podcast. Yanks raise. The Yanks win the series 2 out of 3 at the Trop. And now they go to Minnesota to finish off this road trip for 3 games. So, my next episode, episode 683. I don't know if I'm going to do this Knicks Pacers game 4. It was so... trying to find the right adjective without sounding too complimentary. It was so disgusting, but that's not strong enough of a word. It was so abhorrent that I don't think I'm going to take the time to vomit words about that game. So I might not have a Knicks episode out in 683. I might not. We'll see how the week goes. I might be busy too. That's another factor, but we will be back with the Yankees for sure after the Twins series. But I'm not sure if 683 will be Knicks Pacers. We'll find out. You'll find out. We'll see. Well, if anything, it'll be game 5. So appreciate you all. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you so much for tuning in. I always appreciate it. And we're so close over on YouTube to 200 subscribers. So I would love to get that. This is not a big show at all. It's a podcast where I talk into air. Nobody really tunes into this, but it's a hobby. I get paid a little bit for it. So anybody coming in, any kind of traffic at all is just a bonus. So thank you to all who do tune in. Listen, watch, wherever you are. Thank you. I appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next show. Later.
This episode was brought to you by Anchor.
Hey there! If you stayed the entire way through, we thank you immensely for it. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and that you come back for the next episode real soon. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, Download these episodes and share them with your friends as well. BD4 is a 5-star podcast simply because of you. And we'd like to keep it that way. Have a wonderful day. Go Yankees and go Knicks.